I just wanted to talk to those who are going to pay any attention to the speeches coming up and just give you my own sort of the way I've thought about this and a little sense of what to expect. And it would be no more complicated than this. I guess I see these speeches in tandem as a set, each with its own role. And I would just hope you'd listen to them that way. In the simplest terms, Monday is long-term, Tuesday night is immediate. Monday is poetry, Tuesday night is prosaic. Monday is thematic, and Tuesday night is businesslike. And so Monday, as we discussed before, is very short. I couldn't quite match Abe. It's a few words longer, but you know what? I decided that was fair because you can't match Abe anyway. So it's only appropriate that I couldn't match him in brevity because I obviously won't match him in wisdom or eloquence. Tuesday night's it's also not particularly long. It's probably about 20 minutes read time. And the other thing I would say is that I'm trying to find the right balance between realism and optimism, and it's my own sense that, I mean, everyone is very well aware we're facing very difficult times right now and possibly for quite some time. But also I think it's important to keep some perspective historically. We are the wealthiest society that we ever have. We're wealthier than this state's ever been. So we can get through this. The national perspective, even with severe problems, they're not nearly the dimension that other states are facing. And I guess in sum that I just think there's some responsibility on the part of people in jobs like this to point the way forward and to try to lift people's confidence and spirits even while we face our problems squarely. So that's what I'm trying. You'll all judge whether we achieved any of that or not, but that's just for your background, the way I've tried to think about these two assignments. Sure, and several other reforms. Those things that we offered up to the voters in November get mentioned. The guaranteed refund will be there. I'll be making the point that although we wouldn't be making any such refund any year soon, obviously, that just means we can examine this purely on its merits and as a concept. So, yes, there'll be a direct appeal. One of the themes of really both talks is that reform and forward motion and change is even more urgent when times are tough. It's not an excuse to be paralyzed. It ought to be a further impulse or impetus to make change and move ahead.
What do you think the state needs to do specifically to make sure that Indiana will have the money to pay all these claims that are going to be coming in and to handle these claims, which people say, you know, they're waiting a long time?
Yeah. Well, first of all, our folks are doing a vastly better job than most states. If you read the front page of today's national papers, there are systems crashing in states elsewhere, and ours is performing very well. Yes, the flood of applications has led to some backlogs, but our timeliness rate last month was way up in the 90s and much better than in the past. So our folks are working as hard as they can and keeping more current than other places. And we all know that the UI system's been out of balance in Indiana for years. Benefits were set too high for the tax rates that were established a few years ago. We'd be dealing with this problem now if the economy was doing great. And so we all know that's one of the issues that we'll need to get solved this session, and I know we will.
Mm-hmm. Give back. But right now we're close to 10% and you say we can't spend it. So when would the legislators ever be able to spend the money that is in the reserve?
Well, first of all, 10% is a suggestion. Maybe it should be some different number. I'm open on that. I think that the philosophy that's expressed in that idea is that we should pay our bills, be debt-free, and have a healthy reserve. But that beyond some point, and we ought to all discuss what that safe level is, government ought to quit taking money from taxpayers, leave it to them to spend. And I think that's a very, very sound principle that starts with fiscal responsibility, balanced budgets, and yes, significant reserves, but says that beyond some point, leave the money with the people who earned it. Yes, absolutely. You know, well, education budgets are being slashed all over America. Most Hoosiers have no idea how many teachers are being laid off and how much budgets elsewhere are being cut. We're determined that won't happen here. But even at the best, you know, we're going to have to deal with about the resources we have now. But there's this huge opportunity, and we have to see it as a plus, to start spending the money better. And you know, we have the third worst ratio in America of teachers to total employees. We've got over half the employees of Indiana schools aren't teaching anybody. So reform here is really the friend of education, the friend of the friend of student learning, and, by the way, very much the taxpayer's friend while we're trying to keep services up and with the available money.
I wanted to ask about the Prince Shepherd reform. Senator Long said yesterday that that should be a local option, that voters in each community should decide the shape of their government. Are you willing to accept optional government reform?
Well, we have to look at everybody's idea. We have known from the outset that there'd be all sorts of variations to what the commission suggested and the pieces that I took from their suggestions. There'll be a lot of questions that would have to be answered about that. I mean, first I'd observe that all this system was, nobody had an option when it was put in place. It was put in place in a uniform fashion way back when. And I think we'd have to think through carefully, do you really want a hodgepodge of different systems in different counties? Could there be issues with that? But I think in the interest of moving forward, this is the very first inning. Let's listen to everybody's idea. And, you know, Senator Long's suggestion, I thought, was made in a constructive way. He's looking for ways to get a majority together, to get a consensus together. And that's exactly what I would hope the legislative leaders would all do.
Circumstances are a little different this year, just with the economy, more people are looking for work. Does that give any added reason to take a harder look at that this time? What are your thoughts on that kind of legislation?
Well, I haven't looked at it. I don't have much to say about it. Last year I said we better be very careful making it any harder to hire people in Indiana. Now, that's much more true now than it was at the time. And so you won't find this on my priority list, but we'll see what the legislature wants to do. I'd look at it. I've wrestled hard with this subject, and we've talked about this before. And I think my views about health, about smoking, are pretty clear. We work on this all the time. Smoking's down some in Indiana, and that's good. And and as a result, I think, of some of our policies. On the other hand, I do believe in local control, and I've been hesitant to see a ban imposed on everyone everywhere in exactly the same way. But I've said before, and that I'm open to this, and if the legislature wants to pass one, I'm willing to talk about it, absolutely. I don't understand the problem. You know, unlike other states, we've got $1.3 billion in the bank above and beyond any obligations. And the real question is whether we protect that or go blow it. But you know where I stand on that. Sure. As I said the other day, no one knows that forecasters who missed by $1 billion this year won't miss again next year, even at their lower estimate. Second, no one knows how long this worldwide recession may continue. We may be at the front end of a long period of difficulty. And so if we can avoid, and we can, going into those funds, we ought to do so. We ought to avoid doing so. That's right. Or consequences we haven't seen yet.
Wouldn't that always be the case? Will you always be in a position of not knowing whether we're in the end of a recession or how whether things will work?
I would hope we would always have a reserve in good times or bad. No, you could, at some point we will get to a point where we see the economy recovering, we see revenue starting to come back. But remember, we'll be coming back from a low base. I showed the other day in the budget presentation that on the new forecast, which expects recovery to start during the next 2 years, even if it does, and let's hope it does, revenues in 2011 will still be lower than we thought we'd have in 2009. And if we have, you know, if we allowed people to run through that surplus between now and then, we'd be facing a very serious problem, probably deeper cuts than we're talking about now, or a tax increase, which, you know, of course, I'll not be for.
This is kind of back to the first one we were talking about, though, about refunding money to the taxpayers. It seems like it could put the legislature in a position of their only choices are keep building reserves and give some back to the taxpayers. There'd be no margin there for using additional money for new projects or stimulus.
Say it again.
If you say that you've got to keep $1.3 billion and if that's 10% of our stuff and anything over that, we're going to start refunding the taxpayers as long as we leave that cushion, where do you have new money from spending the stimulus?
From economic growth. And there's nothing that says that the legislature would have to keep a given size reserve, only that it at some point is just more than is really necessary and should not have been taken away from a taxpayer in the first place. No, the legislature could cut taxes anytime it wanted, and it might make sense to do so. The automatic refund idea is simply to recognize that, and we'd had this experience fairly recently, you know, only a few years before Indiana was broke in 2004, it had a huge surplus, and it burned a hole in the government's pocket. And it committed to a lot of spending, which it then couldn't sustain when things slowed down. That happened, by the way, in many, many states. So on the one hand, it's a protection against putting yourself in a hole, spending yourself into a bad corner. And on the other hand, it recognizes this is the people's money to start with. And government should not take more than beyond some point of prudence, which for me does include a reserve.
Do you think we should have a tax cut now?
Quite possibly, but you know, some of that may be part of the national, apparently will be part of the national plan that we're waiting for.
But a state tax cut?
Well, let's see what the federal decision is first.
Yeah.
Well, there's not. I mean, education is vastly, by far, the number one expenditure of the state and dwarfs what we spend on corrections. Well, actually, the increase is about the same, but that's a funny way to think about it. We're, as a matter of priorities, we are spending, as I support, vastly more on education, and we're protecting education spending in a way we can't protect almost anything else except child protection and public safety and Medicaid, which we've laid out as our top four priorities. So, we are not going to do what is happening in other states and start letting felons out of prison early where they would jeopardize the safety of Hoosiers. And doesn't amount to a whole lot more capacity, but we need some more to see that that doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that that is going to help spur legislators to enact a constitutional amendment?
It absolutely should. You know, I think it's very positive that in this first year of experience with the new property tax cut, we are finding that much of the alarm was overblown. 2 points. There are 2,600 units, taxing units, in the state of Indiana. Only two came to the Distressed Unit Board. One, the Beech Grove Library, which turned out can handle its problems, and the other, the City of Gary, which is a unique situation, always has been. Point two, the LSA study that you just asked about projects now that the impact of the caps will be dramatically less than was expected for more than one reason, but a principal reason is that governments, local governments and schools, seeing the taxpayers were going to be protected, have begun to slow down their spending. As Gomer Pyle used to say, surprise, surprise. And but I want to compliment them, by the way, for doing that. This is exactly what we hoped would happen. And it shows, I believe, that we can protect taxpayers and still deliver vital services in that new arrangement. Yeah, well, you're right. It's a moving target, you know. This must be how the Greyhound feels at the dog track. But there's been reform of the Little Calumet Commissioner that's in the process of happening, so I hope we'll finally get a number that's reliable and a plan for finishing. It's a very important project, and as we saw, regrettably, again this summer. Yeah, actually, I did have a short visit with them yesterday, right out here. And, you know, their hearts are in the right place. I think they're coming to understand the facts a little better. You know, we're doing better in the areas which have been modernized than in the old areas. Not well enough, and we've got significant problems. That's why we've paused. But we are not going back to the worst system in America. And we're going to move forward and finish this reform and have a much better system, first of all, with much better service for the people who need and deserve it, and secondly, with many fewer mistakes, less fraud and waste.
Well, what do you say to those who say that it's somewhat of a false choice? Even if we have this crisis, we go back to the old battle system, the old
insight. I say that we spent 2 years studying this, and by far the best option was the one we chose. Trying to spend Indiana tax dollars to fix this system in place would have been grossly expensive and less effective.
President-elect Obama gave a few more details on the stimulus package. Do you have any better sense of what that's going to mean for folks here and what preparations, if any, you're your office or making?
No, we're still very much in the dark, but let me say a couple things. When, and I think it's when, not if. The one question I think we know is, yes, there will be a package. We don't know when, we don't know how much, and we don't know with what strings or in what form. But when it comes, I think that it will give us a good chance to work with the legislature and everyone on investments of these one-time funds in things that, for instance, I hope generate economic activity and jobs. That clearly can include public investments. Could include some sort of temporary tax reductions that generate jobs. We'll just have to wait and see what's coming. What will be key is to recognize this is temporary money and to focus it on things that are the things for which it was intended, things that are likely to put people to work. So, yes, we're thinking very hard about it. We know what we would propose to do with much of it. Capital projects, transportation or otherwise, is certainly one obvious category.
Beyond the refund, did you mention the potential of a tax cut either?
No. Again, it's all back to Bill's question. It's all speculative until we see, you know, what is coming and on what terms and how much.
The number meaning in here, the number that you put out on that, any thoughts on the full package?
It means that our children are going to get handed a whopping big bill, an interest charge, and I just hope it's carefully thought out and well spent. You know, there's a serious risk. You know, the pork frenzy in Washington is going to be bigger than ever before, and I just hope fervently that the president-elect and everyone there will keep focused on the real objective and not yield to the usual temptation to take care of every special interest. But they are, as we've all been reading, they're there in force already. You can't plop $1 trillion on the table or in the trough, so to speak, and not have the herd show up.
Your budget proposes a moratorium on capital spending for universities. If some of this federal stimulus money came, would you be okay with using some of that for universities?
Sure, exactly. Now, this is really the point I wanted to address when Bill asked. These things would all be, these are the kind of things you would look at. And then if that happens, then it'll be our turn to make sure that it is really a necessary project. Our criteria would be, are they projects that can be started quickly and actually will put people to work quickly? And are they projects of genuine, lasting economic value to Indiana? Not nice-to-dos, not pet projects, not something off someone's old wish list. It'll be our turn then to look out for the general interest and not just some special interest. Can I make one other point about this? I appreciated the, in a way, the criticism the other day about our budget and jobs, but it missed a couple of very obvious points. First of all, there's lots in that budget that deals with jobs. The money at Atterbury, for example, there are thousands of jobs growing and going to grow at Atterbury and Muscatatuck through the project that we've been putting together down there. That's one example. Secondly, it's not in the budget per se, but please note in terms of capital spending, because of major moves, we're setting by a mile a record for spending on infrastructure in Indiana right now before the first federal dollar arrives. Now, Indiana had its own counter-recession program in major moves a long time ago. And then third, our budget is aimed at jobs directly when it keeps spending and taxes down and keeps us out of the fiscal ditch so that we remain a very attractive place for the investment that matters most from private companies. So, inside that budget, there's plenty that goes to jobs. I could have mentioned the 21st Century Fund and its investments in small firms, for example. But if and when, or when there is a federal program, that'll be the time to work with everyone on the kind of investments that I described a minute ago. And so let's wait for that.
On that point, the speaker of his speech in the floor shouldn't be sitting around waiting for, you know, President Obama or the feds to bail us out. We need to do things here. We can't rely on the federal government to help us. And then, you know, there's a flip side, which I think I'm hearing from the Republicans, is let's wait and see what they do before we take any action.
Well, let me just say, and it goes back to the invading the reserves and so forth. Be careful of the kind of thinking that got Indiana, made Indiana bankrupt just a few years ago. Surely we learned something. And we're not going back down that trail. I would hope that people who were a part of it would have learned a little something. No. The check comes, we'll cash it. If they're going to do this, I ask our delegation to make sure that we don't get the short end, as somehow Indiana has in many cases in the past. No, I'm not against the idea of the federal government trying something. I'm worried about the way they might do it or the extent to which they might do it. But we would, I think, here, I believe we would put it to better use than many states. Many states will simply take this money and pay the bills they can't pay right now. Much of their money will be swallowed up just trying to keep their budget, their collapsed budgets together. We can actually use, as far as I'm concerned, all the money to on-job producing investments. And I hope if we're very careful about that, it'll be one of the better examples around the country of how this federal package did make a difference in the economy. Quite a lot. Obviously, even before he was elected, but certainly since, we've... I don't make a suggestion, or we didn't send any of our legislation without checking it with him, making sure it's completely consistent with his views, and it is. So in terms of dollars to the classroom, he's an expert, by the way, having been in education at every level all the way up. He knows where the money is not well spent. He knows how to get it into more and better paid teachers and better academic offerings. So we're completely aligned on that. We're completely aligned on discipline. And so our bills have all been, as far as I'm concerned, they are his bills as much as ours. And I'm not going to make, try not to make a move in terms of education that without looking to him first. Well, I would say that it'll be different, but of course all such relationships are. No, watching it with interest, but that's, you know, he got elected and it's his job.
The inauguration also marks the end of the line of Steve Carter.
Yeah.
For the Do Not Call list up in Lake County.
Yeah.
For taking on the Chicago machine and various things. How would you rate him as a public servant?
I think he's been a great public servant. I went by to see him the day before yesterday and told him so. We reminisced. He's been a great, certainly a great advocate in the AG's role as the people's lawyer. He's defended, he and his people have defended the state and its laws very effectively. And he's a very sincere and committed guy. I was sad to see him go, but I hope we'll see him back in public service somehow, someday. Yeah.
There were two dances. There was the event at the State Fairgrounds. There was
right.
The prayer breakfast.
Yeah.
This year, just here in the atrium and one block?
Yeah.
Why?
Part of it is the second time around, didn't seem to call for as much, but the times don't either. So we thought it'll be very, as you say, dramatically less of it, low-key. I think that is best suited to the occasion in both respects. And you can't really call Saturday a ball. I think we'll have a ball. We've got comedians and Tom Griswold as MC, and I hope it'll be fun. But we're going to have hundreds of the young people who are part of the campaign will be included, and should be a good party. But that's it.
No
talk. Oh no. All right, thank you all very much.